providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Now, those first two segments with Richard Postma, more technically focused and more of a, market chart outlook there, as Doc really does stick to those monthly charts and tries to simplify where he sees the markets going. And boy, oh boy, Doc has been quite spot on through a lot of this bear market, even through a bit of the bull market too. We are going to switch a little bit of focus here in the final two segments, taking a bigger look, a big picture look at the resource sector, as we are chatting with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, since you manage a long-only fund in the resource sector, we've had you on the show a number of times, and you've broken down the different resources that you're focused on, some of the different stocks that you have been buying. There's no doubt that, look, this has been kind of a bear market for a lot of sectors, including a lot of the resource sectors, and the stocks have really taken it on the chin. When it comes to managing a long-only portfolio in this environment, what have you been doing this year? Do you find that consolidating positions, casting a more narrow net, is better than spreading out your positions, casting a wider net? Please share with us your strategy in these bear market times.
You got it. Well, thanks for having me back on the program here, Corey and Chad. It's always good to join you guys. Yeah, I mean, anybody listening to this that has been involved in any risk-on segment of the market understands the pain that investors have gone through here over the past 6 to 7 months in most sectors. And then, of course, if you look at precious metals in particular, it's now been over 2 years of pain, particularly in the equities, but also in the general metal prices since they peaked in late 2020. A little bit easier on the battery and base metal side of things, where a lot of those metals and associated equities were rocking and rolling just as recently as March this year. So in that sense, I think there's probably more wood to chop amongst the elsewhere in the metal complex, where I would like to think that amongst precious metals in particular, a lot of the weaker hands have been shaken out. That said, you're right. I mean, I am cautious on resources, very cautious. But it's paradoxical. It's not due to where natural resources and commodities sit generally. It has to do with the broader market. So let me explain. On the mining front and on the commodities front, there's reason to be actually very optimistic over the medium to long term here, looking over the course of this decade. Really, if you look at metal prices, the valuations of associated mining equities, we are at record lows relative to the general stock market. So from a relative space or perspective, I still believe we're in a very, very good place. That said, these are risk-on equities at the end of the day, particularly as you get down to the junior end of the mining sector. And we are in a risk-off environment in the broader market that I think, and again, this is just a hypothesis, I don't have a crystal ball here, but I think we have some more pain ahead. You know, last year in 2021 was a unique combination, euphoria amongst market participants, as well as incredibly accommodative monetary and Federal Reserve support for the general markets. There's inevitably going to be a hangover, and my concern is that the broader markets remain weak for the next 12 months is kind of the assumption that I'm making. And as a result, even though this decade looks good for mining investments, we could suffer for that long period. So the biggest risk that I see it for investors is getting shaken out here in the next 6, 12, or 18 months for those that are invested in mining equities. So do what you have to do if you're already invested. You know, keep a healthy cash position. Also focus on investments that have lengthy runway before they need to raise capital next. I do not expect it to be a particularly hospitable environment to finance your operations in the next 12, maybe even 18 months. So perhaps look for juniors that are out there that are good on working capital through, you know, mid to late 2024 and can deliver catalysts in the meantime. Of course, the vast majority of juniors don't fit this mold, but there are a few out there if you dig deep. So that'd be one place that I'd encourage investors to look.
Well, Matt, some cogent points there about the potential of the financial hangover and what that could mean for all sectors, but of course, the resource sector. And you brought up a key point that I'd love you to expand on, and that is that these are equities. At the end of the day, these are companies that are running different stage mining projects, so they could be earlier stage discovery stories, more advanced exploration, or moving into developers or producers or royalty companies. There's a swath of different areas that these companies can participate in, but a lot of investors, Matt, make the mistake of thinking like, hey, I've got gold because I've got gold stocks. Well, if they have gold explorers, they may not have any gold yet. Or, hey, I've got nickel stocks, but again, if they have a nickel developer, they're not producing any nickel yet. So how do you separate the wheat from the chaff when you look at these companies? And you mentioned they're having the runway of money. That's one thing, but the key thing is, how do these companies build value? So how do you dive into these companies and really separate the good from the bad?
If there's a second point that I could impress upon your audience, of course, the first is, don't get shaken out. Don't have overly optimistic expectations for mining equities here over the next 6, 12, 18 months. Take a medium to long-term time horizon. And if you can't do that, you shouldn't be in the space. That's the first point. The second point is to really de-emphasize the metal of focus. And I know this goes a lot against what investors focus on, particularly when they're new to the space, but it can be very tempting to chase the flavor of the month metal, which I don't think there's any question that lithium is that metal at the moment. When I evaluated a new investment opportunity, I do evaluate the metal of focus, but that's one of the very last boxes that I check when evaluating an investment. I always start with the people. Are they honest people? Have they made money for myself or for other investors that I trust in the past? Are they well incentivized? Do they have overly high G&A? You know, are they distracted with three or four other opportunities, or are they all in on this? Have they been successful in this area before? You can screen out so many names in this space by just looking at the management team. And that helps a lot with kind of prioritizing what opportunities to do due diligence on. Because if you can discard 80 to 90% of the opportunities off the bat, then you're going to be focusing more on the wheat, as you said, versus the chaff. So that's one thing to look at. The second I would look at is the actual project quality. And there are a lot of folks in this industry that like to invest in the optionality plays. Those are the stories that, you know, at $1,800 gold or $350 copper will never be built in a million years. But, you know, if gold does run up to $3,000 in the next couple years, or if we do see $5 to $7 copper in the near term, these projects, at least on paper, can make a lot of money. So there are folks that have done this very successfully. You know, the Electrums and Sun Valleys of the world come to mind. That is definitely not the MJG style of investment. We like stories, you know, development stage, production stage, you know, post-discovery speculation that we at least think can make money at current metal prices or metal prices that are well below current metal prices, depending on the metal of focus. So I would encourage investors to look at those higher margin development projects, to look at those lowest quartile producers, and not try to speculate on $3,000 gold happening over any time frame, because we probably will see that this decade, but I think anybody that tells you with any definitive view when it's going to happen is probably fooling themselves or fooling you or both.
So, Matt, we hear all the time how important management is. You even outlined it there. How do you go about reevaluating some management teams when there's bad news that comes out of the sector? And unfortunately, this year, there's been a lot of bad news, but a couple companies that have strong management teams and have had success in the past, like Pure Gold, McEwen Mining, they've struggled. How do you reevaluate the team then?
Yeah, good question. Well, one thing that I would start with is for investors to separate share price performance from management performance. Sometimes they are correlated, sometimes they are not. So I think you need to be flexible and look at every situation on a case-by-case basis. Occasionally, you'll have management teams, some that are even credible and have you know, done well before, make false is a strong word, but set expectations that are not met. And occasionally that can be, you know, nefarious. Oftentimes it's reasonable guess and things just did not come to pass. So I think you have to be a little bit flexible with your thinking. Obviously, if a management team is, you know, projecting a permit to land on a certain date and this permit does not come to pass, and you look at that jurisdiction of interest and you see other projects and other companies at similar stage also laid on permits, that might shake you from that particular investment, but it's perhaps not a reason to hold that against management, you know, if you evaluate this opportunity in the future or look at one of their, you know, future deals. Conversely, if a management team says they're raising $3 million and they're going to conduct a 10,000, you know, meter program at Project X, and they pocket that money and then go do something entirely different, or jack up their salaries or jack up their marketing expenses or all of the above, then that's something that I think you can hold directly against the management team. So I think there are a ton of different nuances in this industry. And, you know, the best thing you can do is follow these stories very closely, keep a smaller circle of groups that you're willing to back. Otherwise, it gets too overwhelming. I mean, between North America and Australia, we're talking 3,000 juniors that are out there. So admittedly, you're not going to be able to have a pulse on each and every one of these teams, but you can have a sense of, you know, who's been successful in the past and who looks most likely to be successful in the future. But it's worth doing some deep digging and, you know, not just talking to the management teams themselves, but talking to other investors, you know, using other investors as reference points, talking to other management teams and seeing how they respect other groups. You can learn a lot about a given management team without talking to that management team itself.
Some great advice there, Matt, on how to evaluate management teams. I think it's very interesting what you said earlier, that one of the last things you look at is actually the metal or the commodity underlying it, because you're most focused on the people and the project and does it make sense. But there are certain investing themes that have their moment in the sun and other investing themes that are still on the back burner. I know one of the areas that you do like is the battery metal side of things when you think of copper, nickel, vanadium. So are you still animated by that particular narrative? And do you think that there's still legs to run in a lot of those kind of companies?
Yeah. So I do have a bias towards the battery metals. But as I mentioned, I am cognizant of that. And I do my absolute best to de-emphasize the actual metal of focus when I'm evaluating a given investment. That said, I've always had a bias towards the metals that allow us to live our 21st century lifestyle. This is actually a funny point. It's different from a lot of participants in the space. Most were drawn into mining investing, at least that I've talked to, through a love of gold. And then they've branched out into the other metals. For me, it was the exact opposite. I've always been fascinated by the metals that allow us to live our 21st century lifestyle. You know, whether it's the nickel that's going into our electric vehicle batteries, or the rare earth metals that are going into our wind turbines, or the uranium going into our nuclear reactors. You know, the copper taking all this electricity from point A to point B. The ag minerals that go into inorganic fertilizer. So that's actually the bias that I had coming into the space. But as I've invested more and more, the lesson has been over and over again, don't get caught up in the metal of focus. Focus on the people. I would much rather invest in a zinc company. You know, you could probably say that zinc is one of the least sexy metals out there currently. I don't know if there's many listeners that would disagree with that, but I would happily invest in a zinc asset if it's high grade, it's a substantive scale to potentially be acquired by a bigger party. I trust the management team. They're well incentivized. I see a big delta between what I think fair value of the project should be and where the company's actually trading. Then I would, you know, chasing one of these 200 plus lithium juniors that are out there, you know, clamoring for investor attention. You know, I find oftentimes when you're picking from a larger opportunity set, it's more difficult. And like one you know, material of interest that we talked about a little bit before this interview is phosphate. I mean, there's only maybe 12 phosphate juniors globally. This is between North America and Australia. And I can make a good case that phosphate is you know, there's a battery narrative building around this material as LFP cathodes continue to eat into the market share of these nickel-rich NMC cathodes. So if you're a big nickel bull, and I think there's reasons to be optimistic on nickel, you know, given the caveats that I've already mentioned, perhaps you could hedge that with some phosphate exposure. And I think if you're evaluating 12 opportunities and picking the very best of the bunch, you have a better chance of success than, you know, sifting, you know, between 200, you know, lithium or 110 uranium juniors. So oftentimes it's paradoxical where the metals with the best narratives and the best macro forecasts, it can often be tougher to actually find high quality investments within all the noise.
So Matt, fact of the matter is pretty much all the stocks have sold off. And even in the first couple of segments, Doc was outlining how he thought some of the bigger companies, especially in the precious metals sector, could actually pull back even more than the juniors, because the juniors are just so bombed out. When you're analyzing a company, you must be paying attention to market cap. And there's a lot of single-digit million-dollar market caps out there. Plus, ounces in the ground, when we're talking precious metals, they're getting not much value at all. where do you see the most opportunity, let's say, in the precious metals sector? Is it those with ounces in the ground, those with cash that are simply exploring, or those companies that are trying to move into development, understanding, boy, oh boy, it's been a tough game for a lot of those companies going through any sort of mine build right now?
You summarize that well, Corey. I mean, I would actually say there are opportunities amongst each of those niches. You just have to look at it one by one. So talking about the exploration names that are cashed up, a name that comes to mind is Almadex Minerals, which is a holding of the MJG fund, I should mention. They have $16 million in the bank, some marketable securities, and are trading at a market cap of $17, $18 million at the moment. So enterprise value of $1 or $2 million. They're participating in some very high-risk exploration. They're drilling one project in Nevada called Paradise, one down in Mexico as we speak as well. The chance of success on either of these drill programs are very low. And for your average junior that's drilling at this stage, if they miss, we're talking about 90% downside. The beauty of Almadex, however, is that they only have to fall 3 or 4 cents or $1 to $2 million in market cap before they're literally trading at their cash breakup value. So I view that as a unique instance where you can participate in the potential upside that's afforded by early stage exploration without taking the potential for a 90 to 95% hit if things don't pan out as they normally don't. And then of course the other beauty is Almadex will not have to raise for many, many years, if ever again, because of this working capital position. So that also checks the box that we were talking about earlier in the interview. In terms of the development stage names, I agree with you, especially the later stage development names in the precious metal space have been absolutely hammered. I actually think amongst the gold-focused names, we're probably closer to the bottom than we are the top. I mean, it's been 2 years of pain already. I do expect the precious metal-focused names en masse to turn around, you know, sooner than the rest of the metals complex. So maybe that'll happen closer to spring or summer of next year, potentially. That's just kind of the framework I'm working around. But you mentioned ounces in the ground. I think that's a potential pitfall for investors in this space. The distinction has to be drawn. Not all ounces are created equal at all. Some are very low grade, metallurgically challenged, located far away from infrastructure, never going to be permitted, never going to receive the social license. So I think that's a pretty basic metric to look at. And I think each project needs to be looked at within its own context. So I'd steer away from investors focused too much on that. But again, if it's a good project that's focused on gold, makes sense at the current metal prices, makes sense at $1,600 gold, makes sense at $1,500 gold, you have a management team in there you trust, and you don't think there's going to be a dilutive financing in the immediate term, then yes, those are opportunities to look. And then I would just flag the royalty names quickly. I mean, I do have a bias towards the royalty business model. I think it's a phenomenal way to get long-term exposure to the mineral space. And so I think a lot of the royalty companies out there, not all of them, but if they're willing to sit on their hands, have no need to finance over the next 12, 18 months. And additionally, if things get really ugly, a few of them have pretty healthy balance sheets where they can go out there and opportunistically do deals. So I think as the market gets increasingly ugly, should that occur, the advantage tilts further and further to the royalty names. So it's also at least a niche of the market where folks should potentially take a look.
Well, Matt, just one more question for you as we wrap up. There's the advantage you mentioned of companies that are cashed up, but it really comes down to what they do with that cash, because we saw a lot of companies that were cashed up a year or two ago went out and blew through all that money on drill programs, on permitting, on G&A, on developing or, you know, de-risking their project, and they didn't get any market love for it after 2 years of all their work. So even if a company is cashed up, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that they're going to build value. So how do you dig a little deeper in that one component?
No, it doesn't. And there are no guarantees, especially at this more speculative end of the market. So each of the investments that we're placing have risks, and many of them will not work out. Some of these will be because of mistakes management make. Obviously, with the focus on people, you hope that the majority of ones that don't work out is just because of bad luck or for external factors that are outside of management's control. But I think, as I've invested more and more in the space, really what you learn to do is try to minimize the obvious mistakes that you make, because there's an element of luck with all of these bets that you place. Even the best team that are working incredibly hard, incredibly well incentivized, have already made two major discoveries in their past two companies. There's no guarantee that their current one is going to succeed. But the point of it is to really turn the odds as much in your favor as you can, and then stick with these people through thick and thin. And as long as they're delivering what they've said they will deliver, and you're happy with the company's trajectory, and you don't view that the company's price has exceeded what you think is fair value, then you stick with them. So I would encourage investors to understand that the chance of failure far outweighs the chance of success for all of these companies. I mean, you can assume a PEA level project, at most 10% of them will ever, you know, be built within our lifetime. You know, feasibility stage projects, you know, maybe you're closer to 30% of them being built. These are the later stage names. But if you're in the exploration game, like the chances of success are very, very minimal. And I think that bears repeating. So do your best as an investor to back the right people and for them to have cash to be able to accomplish certain unanswered questions. And sometimes the answer is not what you want, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad speculation. You just have to stick with your process ultimately.
That's true. Don't get too locked up in maybe the flavor of the month, flavor of the year in terms of metal, and make sure that you're doing your due diligence. Final comment then, Matt. You've alluded a number of times to next year, maybe even the beginning of 2024, being a major turning point. What are you looking for to play out over the next year, year and a half, either macro-wise, market-wise, that does cause that big turn? Because right now, all we hear about is how unloved, how oversold the sector is. But quite frankly, just because people are bailing out of the sector doesn't mean that's going to form a bottom.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption is that the broader market has to bottom. So that's what I'm basing that expectation off of. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case. But as stated, I think the fair assumption is that these are risk on equities at the end of the day. And if the broader market is in a panic risk off mode, then we're going to suffer. And, you know, it's better to assume that and hope for the best than to have false expectations. But, you know, I've gone back and looked at kind of the four major, you know, general market dislocations that have occurred over the past century. And, you know, the average duration of them, I believe, is 26 months based on the numbers that we ran. And, you know, you're looking at 40 to 50% drawdowns. Obviously, the Great Depression was an anomaly, and that went on for closer to 3 years and you know, entailed a closer to an 80% drawdown. But on average, if you look at the major market dislocations, that's what you can be in store for. So it's not a particularly sophisticated or exact expectation, but I think those that, you know, spend their waking hours trying to, you know, opine that the tops and bottoms of markets are doing themselves a disservice. So I think my energy is better spent on identifying specific investment opportunities and specific teams to back. I think it's helpful to have a view on the broader market, but I don't think you need to have ideas in mind of exact timing, because, you know, this is just, it's extremely difficult to know what the market is going to do in the short to medium term. But if you look at relative valuations and you're patient, things start to work out over the longer term.
Yeah, and just pay attention to what the market's doing too, right? Don't listen to all these people that are always calling bottoms or always calling tops, because they are wrong so much of the time, and sometimes it can keep you in positions much longer than you should be. Matt, it's great chatting with you. Thank you so much for sharing. I think most importantly, how you're managing the portfolio, but also your outlook for a wide range of sectors and how you're analyzing companies, because we all need to understand that in this bear market, it's a tougher environment for everybody. Matt, thank you again for your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on the weekend show. Be sure to visit our website and podcast throughout the week to stay up to date on all of our market commentary. This last week was a busy one, especially after that Fed meeting. Everybody, thanks for tuning in this weekend. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.